And I can see the speaker has not learned yet. I'm going to do the speaker now.
I'm going to do the
speaker. Hello?
No, I'm going to do it.
Like a Bulgarian. Must hold on to that thing. I just realized that
you
was.
You know, when I drive, I don't get
food. No, you must not get food. You didn't have an excuse.
You sound like you made it. 2 o'clock, yeah. Insert the answer. Yeah. Insert the answer.
I am telling you, you did.
Honorable members, all indications are that there won't be any foreign policy changes that have to be expected. Judging from that, but rather, perhaps for the purposes of this committee, it would be important that we focus when we conduct our oversight over the department on how the department, you know, in its work gives expression to the attainment of our domestic priorities in its work going forward. Because really the president, you know, comprehensively dealt with infrastructure development, issues of job creation, and so on and so on. So now our own field of work, we do not delve into infrastructure development. We do not deal with infrastructure development per se. But ours really is to see how, in the conduct of our foreign policy, we seek to achieve those domestic priorities set out by the president and government. So we might have to, in the conduct of our work as a committee, pay particular attention to that particular matter over and above all the other issues that we will be dealing with. Honourable members, let me finally, before I hand over to the DG, Ambassador Machila, acknowledge the ambassador and the deputy directors general who are here today. I acknowledge Ambassador Molekane, the DDG for Europe, Ambassador Suklal, who's back from his mission in Europe. He's been there for quite some time. Ambassador Suklal is the DDG for Asia and the Middle East. We also have Ambassador Koch, responsible for CITEN. And then we have the DDG for HR, Mr. Mohai. DG, as for the rest, I will you know, ask you to introduce your chief directors and so on. Honourable members, thank you. Let's go into the briefing on the Department Strategic Plan 2012 to 2017. Ambassador,
thanks, Honourable Chairperson, and distinguished Honourable Members of Parliament and the Committee, friend Ambassador, and colleagues. Honourable Chair, we you are introduced part of my colleague. Safe to say that Mr. Koch is the acting CEO, Chief Operation Officer in the department. And then we have Ambassador Ngombane, he is the Africa Multilateral. And we have Mr. Ramashaw, is the man who handles part of the money. Because the whole task is the chief is not here, DDG mostly is not here. And then you have Mr. Gozo, internal audit chief director. And you have Mayor Gatlide, she is dealing with the supply chain. All our goods goes there. And then you have Ms. Africa, who handles our projects, buildings, etc. So those colleagues that side handle the resources.
These
colleagues here just make policy, but those are money from that side. So when the question comes on resources, you face that side. Thanks, Chair. So I'm told you've given me 30 minutes to make a presentation on the the ERCO annual performance plan 2012-2013, and the ECO plan 2012-2017. The ECO plan 2012-2017 and annual performance plan is fully aligned and compliant with the outcome 11, delivery agreement and management performance assessment tools, with a new thing called AMPAT, the management performance assessment tool. The plan and the fixed plan are also fully aligned with the National Strategic Guidelines of August 2010. They give us those guidelines. Ordinary Peter, I'll make an overview. I will talk about the four budget programs of the department. We'll then go to the policy planning initiative we're planning for this year. The first one will be around the South African Development Partnership Agency, SADPA. And the second policy will be around the Foreign Service Bill, which will ask all our members to ask us to pilot through the parliament. Then we'll go to situation analysis, as we are required by the planning process in the government. And then we'll scan the environment in which we are operating. And then we'll deal with the program, enhance African agenda, sustainable development, strengthening political and economic integration of SADC, strengthening South-South relations, strengthening relations with the strategic formations of the North, advancing the global system of governance, then strengthening political and economic relations. We'll then go to some of the services that support this program, like public diplomacy, acquisition and international transfers, how much money we are transferring abroad. As I said, we have to do it with the four budget programs. This is what you have voted on last year. Strategic Relations Program, we call it Program 2. Public Diplomacy and State Protocol, Program 3. Administration, Program 1. Agency Transfer, Program 4. All this will have to do with the National Treasury at some stage. Now, let me then turn to the planned policy initiatives, honorable members. And this goes into the Partnership Fund for Development. We are saying we are going to start the SADPA, South African Development Partnership Agency. But in order to operate it, we need to create a fund. I will explain more about this fund, how it's going to work, because it's an issue for discussion for today. But for this to operate, this fund to operate, we need a board of trustees, because we have to make sure that there is a proper, effective utilization of this fund. We had the African Renaissance Fund, which has been operating. Now, this fund will be a fund that will be operating instead of the ERF, African Renaissance Fund. We need a board of trustees to ensure policy and oversight, and this board of trustees will also be advisory role to the minister. I will explain this more and more to the honorable members as we go on. What we've been doing in the operation of the African Renaissance Fund, the bill or the guidelines requires that there should be concurrence of approval between the finance minister and the minister of DERCO. In other words, there will be a request for utilization of the ERF fund. I will then convene the advisory committee of the fund, agree on the allocation, but before disbursement, we then have to write to the minister, who has then to get concurrence from the finance minister for the transfer to be effected. So we are making some proposals on how to simplify to make sure that we can disperse quickly, but also respecting the guidelines. And then I think head of SADPA will be accounting authority for the fund. To date, the African Nations Fund, the DG, is accounting officer for the fund. And sometimes when you operate like that, you don't have a control over a certain external environment. Now, in the new one we're proposing, that rather we should have a CEO or a head of the fund who then become a kind of authority, because we are proposing changes on how the fund will be operating. But making a note that, for our members to know that SADBA will have a strong emphasis on project and program management and the monitoring and evaluation, something that the ARF did not have. Now, well, say the partnership fund will replace the African Matters Fund, another fund. So that ARF, that X51 of 2021, we're asking that it be SADBA replaces the ARF as a separate jurisdiction person. Well, I say this thing because what I remember, since we have tried to amend SADBA, we have tried to make changes, but the fact that they are so numerous that it is better to start a new fund altogether, and structure differently. And that fund, among its objectives, will be to support all South African outgoing development cooperation commitments. What you see today, you see various government departments having so many initiatives. The public administration, example, will go to the DRC and have them on the head count of their people, establish a voter's role for the DRC. And then you see defense heading session programs. Then you see DTI. So there are so many government programs. And then you have this SACU and revenue sharing. So he says, no, let's have one coordinated fund, so all the government programs can be under one fund, so that we can then have a clear appreciation of the quantum of assistance, both financial and human capital wise, that is making in Africa and other countries in the main. So that at any given time, we can say these are the kind of commitments South Africa is having to the rest of the continent or other developing countries, especially poor indebted countries. It provides for the direct transfer of funds from multiple sources and foreign donors directly to the fund. So, to date, the African Matters Fund was voting from the honorary members from the Treasury. Treasury says we give you this amount of money to assist. But there are a lot of other donors who say, let's work together. We can also put money. We can measure run to run. If a fund, we'll put run to run. So, and we believe that is a very good system to work on, since our commitments are becoming more and more in the continent, in particular, in developing countries. So I'm trying to find a model, financial model, in which we will able to use our own funds and then still accept the funds from other donor agencies. There is an increasing tendency to move towards trilateral cooperation in the continent. It will be maybe like DRC, South Africa, and then sometimes we hear Germany says, okay, we can fund this program, so let's work together. So we're trying to open a window where such cooperation is quite possible. And hence we say this new fund, the SADBA fund, will be very different from the RDP or from the ERF fund. And secondly, accountable elements and compliance with the PFM and Treasury regulations. So much as we will be working together with the other agencies, from our side, we cannot veer away from the PFMA and Treasury regulations. So we're going to be negotiating with these other colleagues on how to do things like that better. Provides for audit functions by Office of AG for actual evaluation. Now, the perennial question of the general has been how ERF funds are accounted. Mostly because in some situations, the way they are accounted, you know, we operate in 53 countries, they've got different accounting systems. So you contribute because of solidarity, you know, a foreign policy of being also based on solidarity, on assisting the poor countries. So sometimes the accounting systems are signs that it's very, very difficult for us to go to a country and pin them down onto a particular accounting provision. So we're then saying that maybe what we need to do in the new fund, we have to revisit these challenges because they've been raised from time to time by the AG in particular. So that is about the fund. So where are we with the fund, honourable members? We have developed the business case. We have looked through the business case as we are required by the law. It has gone through the treasury. We are doing that together with the treasury and the DPSA. So it has gone through that. It is now with the justice. They are looking through the legal requirements of the fund. It's going to come back to us. So the idea was to launch this fund the 1st of April 2012. In other words, we have a phase out of the ARF and phase in of the capital fund. But we're still going to review this to make sure that there will be a seamless transition from the ARF to the new fund. We'll keep the other members updated as we move on this. So that is the first initiative for DIRCO this year. The second one is this foreign service bill. I think honourable members, some of you are aware of this issue for some time. But we thought we should share with you the current legal framework in which we are operating as DIRCO, the public service of South Africa, as established in terms of Section 197 of the Constitution of South Africa of 1996. The public service is governed by the Public Service Act of 1994. Because it's a Schedule 1 department, is regulated by the PSA, Constitution of Service applicable in the Foreign Service. The Foreign Service dispensation are determined by the Minister of DPSA in terms of Section 33C of the DPSA. So although we operate in a foreign environment, our conditions are determined by the Minister of the DPSA. So the current reality is that the mandate of DIRCO is not legislated nor articulated in the Constitution. There are broad provisions, as I pointed out earlier on where we derive our mandate. The role responsibility of DIRCO with regard to foreign policy needs to be strengthened. And the role of head of mission as a coordinator also need to be the ambassadors and high commissioners. Now, I wanted to share with honourable members the rationale for legal instrument. And the first thing is that we operate in an international environment that is not taken into account by the PSA. And we have no control in some case over that international environment. We can influence to a particular extent, but we cannot totally control the global environment in which we are operating. We need to adjust into that global environment. Secondly, we need to take into account different legal systems of various countries. When you employ local good staff in our 125 missions, we have to look into each and every national policies and laws of that country. We cannot say we use South African laws to employ local good staff in our embassies. We have to employ them according to the local laws. We need to consider the characters of the countries we operate within. We are bound by international obligations, treaties, and protocols. Offer assistance to South Africans abroad. We may purchase properties and assets abroad. That's beneath Africa's duty. We conduct financial transactions abroad. So all these things we are doing, PSA doesn't look into some of those type of things. And then foreign business has an oversight role over the government departments and international relations. So it is a custodian of international law, international agreements, that is DIRCO. We regulate, agreed foreign representatives, and other interaction with the Office of State. We provide employment in foreign missions. So we thought our members should look into all these issues that impact on us. So those are the rationale why we thought we need a separate bill. Like many countries have their own foreign service bill that helps to regulate. Like in our country, we have security services the role as a PSA is operate under different dispensations because of the nature of their work, but also because of the nature of the environment. We thought that we should shift from PSA, we should move into this sort of thing. So we're asking honorable members to assist us in that regard. Now I wanted to share with honorable members what we see as happening outside. The global environment is characterized by major shift in global economic and social dynamics. The world is changing and fast changing. There is so much realignment happening. We see the element of new economic powers, new centers of economic growth in the world that has a particular impact on decision making processes, either on the global issues or regional issues. With the new media and social networks, which may also impact on how we react to challenges and developments globally. We have new innovations, the environmental changes and the importance of environmental diplomacy. We just came back from COP17 and saw the impact of the environment on the policy. Like we have seen 5 years ago, 6 years ago, impact of human rights on foreign policy. Now we see environment, climate changes and other things are becoming very huge diplomatic issues that we need to look at. And then it's information of a new economic and political groupings challenge the established political order. And this is the reality that globally sees the reconfiguration of powers, assertiveness of regions and countries. And then you can see the ongoing shifts and changes in the global power. And you think this is irreversible. These changes are irreversible. So South Africa has to adapt. South Africa has to participate. South Africa has to be part of this changing global relations. And I'm sure all of us know I'm referring to which country, to which region, to which power center, emerging power center in the world. This is redefining how we work. So what it means is that all the foreign policy, they have to make these necessary shifts so that we can participate and accrue the benefit to support, as Honorable Chair was saying, domestic assignment. When you talk about infrastructure, we have to see who can participate with us in Africa development. So in doing so, DERCO's role is to continuously interact with this changing environment and see where we pitch and locate South Africa as a role player in the changes. Otherwise, people will change for you, he will make things for you. So we believe in DERCO has to be proactive and be part of this changing world. And we are saying that competitive information platforms, global mass media and social networks empower the free flow of information and ideas, which impact on government, economic activity, mobilization over religious and social boundaries. Then when they talk about the growth of the African economy, an increasing link with the new economic power, that is why I was trying to preface my attention on this issue. Rules and decisions of the 20th century global and economic changing systems under pressure for change. Notable growth in the South trade. Regional and provincial trading is proliferating. Globalization continues to shape the world and at an accelerated pace. Issues of interstate conflict on the decrease, while report driven competition may lead to its resurgence. Arab-Israeli conflict and increasing tensions between the West and Iran regarding nuclear programs, while any Sunni Shia Muslim conflict in the region, and notably in Bahrain, Iraq, Lebanon, resulting in major tensions between the leading Sunni and Shia powers in Saudi Arabia and Iran, unacceptable levels of sovereign private debt, global economic imbalance, climate change and resource insecurity are causing insecurity, uncertainty and unpredictability. The ongoing Eurozone public debt crisis and expected recession there is threatening global economic stability and growth. The possible graduation of South Africa out of AGOA remains a threat, and the non-renewal of the Act in 2015 is uncertain. We have to come back to this issue, our members, on AGOA and thinking in the U.S. The U.S. increasingly views its foreign policy through an economic prism. State of the Union address, the U.S. may revert to some policies that do not promote the free flow of goods and services. Financial crisis putting pressure on the program's budget of multilateral organizations, development cooperation assistance, and NGOs. Major powers seek secure, sustainable energy and other resources for their development, inclusive of Africa. In our region, ASADA is relatively stable. However, a number of countries are experiencing internal challenges at various degrees. Remedies to these situations will need to go beyond peacemaking and include remedial and reconstructive economic efforts, nation building, and improved governance by various countries themselves. Inter-SADC trade has grown by a significant 165% since the implementation of the Protocol on Trade in 2000. SA currently conducts its foreign policy in an uncertain global environment, and a successful foreign policy is a sine qua non for achieving South African domestic priorities. Now, I want to share with all our members the slide on global GDP growth. Not to punctuate, but just to drive home my remarks I made on the changing global environment. Now, our members, you can see the GDP growth of emerging and developing economies. You can see the GDP of advanced economies at the bottom, and you can see the average growth worldwide. So clearly, we can see that emerging economies GDP is, according to the IMF, that is what's coming from the IMF. On the next slide, maybe it's not clear there, but you can refer to what we have there. I'm just amplifying the first slide on the growth in 2010-2011 and projections for 2012-2013. So that as we map our annual performance plan for 2012-2013, at least we can say more or less this is what our thinking in terms of the global growth and GDP. So that when you talk about this massive infrastructure project, we should know who are the possible partners with us in this massive project which we have announced in the State of Nation number 3. So, we share with you, on the first column, we talk about world output. We talk about advanced economies, and then we try to go to United States, Euro area, Germany, France, and then Ambassador is here, you can correct the statistics. Spain, Japan, United Kingdom, Canada. And then emerging and developing economies, Central Europe and Europe, Commonwealth, Independent States, Russia, and then Asia, China, India, ASEAN, Latin America, Brazil, Mexico, and then the Middle East and North Africa. Just to give a statistical, factual situation of the world in which we live. Then I want to share with you what I think are the trends in Europe. Because hitherto, for the last 3.5 centuries, we are bound with Europe, historically, culturally, we've been bound with Europe. But I thought it would be advisable for us to share with you what we see from Virgo as what is happening in Europe. I will start from the right, go to the left. Not that I'm right wing, but I start from the left, go to the right, in that order. Is a political instability due to the widespread of industrial action and rising tension related to the European crisis. So on the bottom side, on the right hand side, we saw in Greece yesterday, we saw marches in Portugal, in Spain. So we can see the crisis in Europe going. And then the role of rating agencies in the economic and financial crisis. Moody's 2 days back downgraded again. And you see, when that happened with Moody's, we see what happened to the market. You see what happened to the market when Moody's says we downgrade the following countries. That was impacted because those are our patterns which we trade. Then changes Chinese investment in Europe and Africa. You saw the chief of the IMF went to China and said to Chinese, is it possible for you to put 300 billion euros in Europe? Can you buy euro bonds? You know, we have 1.3 trillion American bonds. Huh? I mean, $1 trillion is a huge money. Is it possible for you to buy the euro bonds? Deeper political and economic integration within the European zone, the rest of the world. Much as Europe is this thing, but you can see more and more countries are joining the European Union. And then you can see more and more integration in terms of policies, you know, foreign policy, economic policy, environmental policy. You can see there is more and more convergence, and the EU play more and more important role. Inadequate policy and leadership in integration and migration. The migration question, I think, is a challenge in Europe. You can see different tendencies on how to manage migration. There are tendencies, especially in the East. Aging population, Europe is not getting younger. You see more and more people are living healthier, longer. Economic depression, and that's really the financial economic sovereign debt crisis. Energy security, the issue of development in the North and the Middle East, and then you see assertive Russia, and the move towards the nationalistic tendencies in Europe. Some say they are fueled by migration, some say by unemployment, some say by crisis, some say by more and more, you know, erosion of pension. So there are so many reasons people subscribe why the young people in Europe are becoming so militant and sometimes very less tolerant, especially to foreigners. So we deliberately share with this honorable members, because as I say, Europe still remains by far our largest partner, either in terms of investment, in terms of development cooperation, in terms of tourism, as a technology. If you look at every aspect of life, we're still bound to Europe. But the next slide, honorable members, is to share with you, again, textually, the changes as we see them. Asia has overtaken Western Europe to become Africa's largest trading partner. As far as trade grew by 50% in Africa. Now, you can look into from 1990 on the left column until 2008, what has happened over years, and where we are. As an example, look at Asia and look at Western Europe. In 1990, Africa's trade with Asia was 13%, with Europe was 51%. By 2008, was almost the same. Was almost the same. And if you look at the 2011, Asia has surpassed the Europe as much gone. Now you look into the absolute U.S. dollars, in terms of U.S. dollars, the trade in there. There's the next column. By 2008, it was 198 billion with Asia, Europe 196 billion, and the rest. So it still addressed the question what you're saying. We see a lot of changes taking place in the world. And therefore, on another note, when we shift resources in terms of our human resources, financial resources towards Asia, don't be surprised, because there might be that shift of resources as we move into 2012-2017 plan. And in terms of FDI in Asia, vis-à-vis South African investment, low carbon. The Middle Development Community in Africa, annual average GDP flows. You can see South Africa, by and large, is still a major investor in the continent. But China, Malaysia, and India are also becoming very substantial investors in the continent. In the next slide, I want to share the South African exports, how our exports have grown from 2007 to 2010, and a trade balance with the rest of with the BRICS countries. This is with the BRICS countries in the main. You can see from 2007 where we are, that you can see the jump we had in 2010-2008. In the next slide, it does bilateral trade with each country in the big countries, with China, Hong Kong, India, Brazil, and Russia. And you can see how much South Africa import-export from China and from India. And we still have to work hard on Russia. Now, on the next slide, we talk about economic opportunities, the investment opportunities in four categories: consumer sector, energy, telecom, consumer goods, agriculture, resources, and infrastructure. So we'd like to share with the other members the four industries which have a combined of $2.6 trillion dollars in terms of where we think that potential for the country. In the next slide, it's still part of the environmental scale. Have an export and import by country. Now, you can look into the left side, where we talk about export to these countries, like to Italy, Belgium, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Switzerland, Netherlands, Germany, Japan, USA. This is how much we export to these countries. That is from January 2011 to November 2011. So just 11 month statistics. And you can see how much are we exported to China. Just how much exported to China and Hong Kong. And on the next slide is the import. So you see that the export to China, to USA, to Japan, look from the bottom, go up to Germany, United Kingdom, and to India. That is our export to these countries. And there's import on the from these countries. Again, we still import a lot from China, a lot from Germany, a lot from the United States, etc., etc. As I say, this will influence how we plan going ahead. Now, let me come into the trends in Africa, the economic trends in the continent itself. I think the map on the screen is far better than what the other members have. It all is black and white. Let me look into the screen, and we then talk about the moderate strength of the economy, GDP, the conflict areas, where election took place, stable outlook, and the weather monitoring. You can see the potential growth areas in the continent. That yellow part, where the GDP has been more than 3%. That's why everybody was saying during the IMF that from 2010-2011, Africa saw the biggest growth. Of course, you may argue that it's from the low base, but there's been a real growth in the economy. And it's also projected this year, next year, we'll see similar growth in Africa. Now, we must be part of that growth story, South Africa. We must be part of that growth story in South Africa for our prosperity. In the next slide, that's what we post on that one, is a major political and economic trend in the continent. Now, this is where elections took place, or is going to be taking place. You can see Africa is becoming more and more democratic. You have more and more regular elections taking place in Africa, which is, for us, a very promising sign. What we have to deal with is a post-election scenario, but that election taking place is a good sign for Africa. I'm reminded there's a conflict hotspot in the continent. I must indicate, though, that if you look into the Indian Ocean, you see there's Madagascar there. We can spend time and discuss where we are in terms of Madagascar. And then we have the Comoros. And then we have the Sudan. Then you have that huge red block that Egypt and Libya, and then you have the Sudan, and you have tension in Nigeria, and the others. But our assessment is that the Madagascar, the Comoros, the Egypt, and the Niger situations are manageable, and I think they'll be concluded very, very soon. So it's not an issue that really can raise a lot of eyebrows to the oral members. But of course, we have to keep part there. And this one is the, what I was thinking about is the, I think, elections. And that has taken place, and it's taking place. We're doing a team next week to Madagascar to have to reconstruct the election commission in Madagascar. And Zimbabwe this year might also put elections. They are just completing the constitution processes, then a referendum in Zimbabwe, and Swaziland also, Lesotho go for the elections. The DRC had their elections. So some of them already had the elections. That's Angola. It's going for the elections in Angola this year. So, and you can see in the MENA region, in the North Africa, where you had instability, they are all gearing for elections. It's a very good sign, I think. The next one. And having gone through those processes, we think that you'll begin to see more and more stability, like I was saying, that in the going forward, you'll see more and more stability in the continent. And we'll be remain monitoring those situations as we move on into the next issue, including Swaziland. We have to remain focused in those areas. And these are the intent as this is sort of the summary of those sort of trends in the continent. As I say, our assessment is that it is better than it was 10 years ago. So it's a bit of movement in the continent. You may want us to present this issue, social economic development and trends in the continent. I don't know if all our members have the chance to go through this slide, but mostly wanted to talk about the inter-trade in the continent, and then the impact of global financial crisis on the continent. Now, we visited various regional economies, which is ECOWAS on the left, then we have AMU in the center, then we have SADC, and ECAS. We're just sharing with the honorable members the trends. But what is more important, you see, look at the left column, is a trade. So they can then appreciate the amount of work that we still have to do. The single trade in the region. Now, you see, in Western Europe, the trade is 61%. And extra-regional is 39%. In Asia, Middle East, in Asia Pacific, 39%, and 61% outside. Eastern Europe, 31%. But in Africa, it's 12% of the trade among ourselves, and 8% outside. Middle East, 10%, 90%. Our worry is this Africa, that among ourselves is only 12%, and the rest of the world. That's why our roads, infrastructure roads, all lead to the sea. All rail, roads, all to the sea. It's a colonial network. So what do we do with this infrastructure project that Honorable Chair was talking about, like North-South Corridor and the East-West Corridor, is to link Africans to trade among themselves, not to build to the sea and go out, but inward, looking in terms of infrastructure. Then the next slide is the as a top export market in Europe. And what is the case there? Maybe that's why ambassador is here. The Germany's is really, in terms of Europe, one of our biggest export destinations, followed by United Kingdom, Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, and the others. Then in the next slide, the direct foreign investment from Europe in 2009-2011. You can see United Kingdom is still by far the largest foreign investor in South Africa, followed by Germany, and then Ireland, and the other countries. Honourable members, complete our environmental scan, so that you can put into context why we need that foreign bill and why we're thinking about the shifts and changes in the global environment. Then the next one is just to share with you our departmental structure. How are we considered Virgo? And you look into the extreme column, you can see where we talk about the emissions. First of all, on the left, we have supposedly a total of 2,900 officials, both here and abroad in Virgo. And extreme right, we have missions. I think now we have 47 missions in Africa. The idea, as you know, honourable members, is to open up a mission in each and every African country. And then we have 17 in Africa, Caribbean, in Asia, Middle East, and there are two multilateral and one Africa multilateral mission. So the growth in the last 6 years has been in Africa, Asia, Middle East, and the Caribbean. So that's why you saw a huge expansion of African footprint. Mission. You can see around the members, we have a number of deputy director generals for Africa bilateral, Africa multilateral, Asia Middle East, America and the Caribbean, multilateral, Europe, public diplomacy, state protocol, human resources, training, and corporate services. That's people determining our finances. Now I come to the program. In terms of the enhancement of African agenda and sustainable development. And in this one, we are referring to the meeting that took place over the weekend here of the SADC foreign ministers, who endorsed Minister Dlamini Zuma as a candidate for the chairperson of the regional seat. But also to indicate to our members that we'll be hosting, together with the AU, May 23 to 25, the Diaspora Summit. But expecting anything between 40 to 68 head of state to come here from Africa and from the Caribbean. And the number of business people from Europe, Americas, all over the world, and then academic, NGO, civil society organizations. It's a very huge conference. We are still looking for a venue. We hope that by the end of February we can advise on the venue on this issue. We've been planning for quite some time. And then we talk about the issue of peace and security. We are still focused on promotion resolution of conflict, but more so now on conflict prevention. We're still being continued to deal with the issue of peacekeeping and the special role of women. And we're talking about the finalization of the IGES protocol on additional change of government. Now, honorable, let me share with you the development we had at the AU summit. People are saying, what do you call a change in Egypt? Is it unconstitutional change of government in Tunisia? What do you call it? So far, we only talk about coups in the continent. And then in the IGS protocol governing the unconstitutional change of power, nobody has foreseen that there can be internal change because of internal uprising, like we now have in Egypt and Tunisia. So we're trying to revise the provisions of the IGES protocol to take with this type of changes that takes place, which are legitimate, democratic, reasonable. But for the purpose of the summit, we then agree that Egyptian, Tunisian, and Libyan should take part in the AU as full members, irrespective of the type of change. Because all of us assess the legitimacy of those changes. But I'm just referring to that because it's something that we have to revisit as the AU. And then we're still continuing with the NIPAD program. Again, there was a very separate head of state summit on the 28th of January in Addis on NIPAD and infrastructure, especially towards job creation, towards the regional integration, especially the COMESA, SADC, and ECA, trilateral cooperation, and then also reviewed the issue of G20 focus and other trilateral cooperation that we had, and APRM. And we still have to indicate that we are working very closely with President Zuma, because he's still a presidential champion initiative for the continent, and there is a lot of work that has been done in that area of work. I told you about the African National Fund. We talked about the political integration of SADC, and what is left is this SADC integration agenda that we're supposed to be monitoring now. How you plan the SADC FTA since 2000, and we're supposed to be engaging now on the SADC trilateral FTA with COMESA and ESA, and then this year SADC is supposed to establish a custom union. We are behind. Supposed to build the custom union this year, the SADC. And 2014, supposed to be moving towards market economy. And 2015, to monetary union. So our target guidelines have been missed for some time. And then we're reviewing this issue of SALCU revenue formula. We're still looking at that formula with the possible question of implementation. Again, I don't know if you know, we are the chair of SADC organ on defense security until the end of this year, as well as the Member Security Council and the AU and Peace and Security Council. We are dealing a lot now with the final state of Zimbabwe process. We had a meeting with the British Foreign Secretary here for the last 2 days, and we have been having ongoing meeting over the weekend on the question of Madagascar, including yesterday, on two remaining issues of Madagascar. First, the bill to elect the establish of the Independent Election Commission, and two, the amnesty bill that will allow all political actors to return to Antananarivo to continue. We are still very active on our members on the 9-9 movement. There will be a summit this year in Iran, and we are engaging with everybody towards MDG. We have 3 years left now to assess the MDGs. We will go to India towards the end of March on the BRICS summit. All members, you should be knowing that BRICS is also emerging as a community, because now we have a lot of business involved here. We have academics, we have editors of media, we have youth, we have so many programs of this. And we know there's been suggestions twice that also parliamentarians should be part of the BRICS process. Because another initiative in BRICS, BRICS Bank. Can we develop a BRICS Bank for, because we have to go into BRICS, we call it Green BRIC, Green BRICS. All of us is, the BRICS countries have potential to develop massive green economies because we have resources, technology, and opportunity to grow. So this is in two initiatives, Green BRICS and BRICS Bank, will be discussed in the summit in India, as well as development of human resources, human transfer, opening of markets, etc. So those will be some of the issues that we discussed. And we are bracing ourselves to host BRICS Summit next year in South Africa. We need to host, we hosted ITSA Summit last year and Minsera next year. I talked about the BRICS strategy we're developing with government. We'll be sharing with the other members on what is it that South Africa won out of BRICS. Each of the G20. We're in a Security Council, honorable members. It's a very hectic Security Council this year around because of the changes taking place in the Middle East, in particular, and in Africa. Members will recall that if you look at the agenda of the Security Council, U.S. Security Council this year, over 60% of the agenda items are still about Africa. And therefore, it really keeps our delegations extremely very, very busy at the council itself. Chair, I thought that those are some of the major highlights of the report. But I want to take you to specific pages, like page 39. Page 39. On the climate change. Now, sometimes we have an impression that Africans have not appreciated the history they made in Durban. Chair, that we feel to appreciate, but I'm glad that the minister talked with you last week. What is left for us is to make sure that the legacy of Durban lives and lives forever, that Qatar doesn't, you know, participate. The next one is the International Human Rights System on page 40. Honorable members, we'll have to come back to you. We have a number of instruments we have to rectify in the parliament. We have a backlog of ratification that we need to bring back to the parliament. We'll ask the colleagues to revisit these issues because we are regarded as South Africa as one of the champions of human rights worldwide. But we need to also to adhere to the obligations on international principles of human rights council mechanisms. A lot of them we need to look at, as well as certain protection mechanisms for the victim of violence based on sexual orientation that is in both Africa and internationally. There is a big debate, honorable members. What we did in South Africa last year, just to share with you, it was a very, very difficult discussion at human rights in Geneva. And I was asked to lead a discussion on the LGBT, lesbians, gay, bisexual, etc.
It's a good topic.
Because of the perception and indifferences from certain parts of the world. I'm saying this thing because it's in our continent, it's an ongoing debate. In the Muslim world, it's an ongoing debate. In America, as you know yourself, some states in the U.S. have a big problem. And it's a tendency to some in Europe, in small towns in Europe, there is still a lot of tendencies on this issue. So to be truly speaking, when you talk about this issue, only South Africa stands out without question because of the Bill of Rights, which is our Bible on this issue, and because of practice. I was surprised how many people from Australia fly to South Africa to get married. And I said, but I thought you have a liberal system there. He says, no, you don't know what is happening in Australia. So, but it's a challenge. It's a challenge, honorable members, which you have to resist. It's very sensitive, very complex. What it seeks to do with that resolution we just adopted was to create a platform for global discourse on this issue. I was raising in particular, so as several members will know, as you go, whether you are at the UPA or all organizations which you belong, this issue is going to come up. But also, it's coming a condition for ODA. Many countries say, we'll give you ODA provided you address this question, especially in the continent. I then want to take the honourable members to the slide on 42. The roads are ready to Rio in June. Parliamentarians, businesses, academics, heads of state, ministers, everybody is ready to Rio in June. Rio plus 20. Meeting.
We are inviting them.
Well, I'm not sure in the chair.
Or the honorable members.
Thanks for the...
It's nice and sentimental.
Thanks for the protection, honorable chair. If you protect me, maybe we'll think differently. But ordinarily, this type of conference should include all stakeholders. Like in Rio 1992, everybody was there. Why everybody has to be there? Because of the major decisions that will be taken in Rio. Building one, COP17, CMP7. And from Rio, you have to build it into India, 2013, Biodiversity Summit. So if you lose these three major conferences, we'll have a big, big problem. So we hope that our members will... we are calling the opportunity, Chair, to go to Rio. The FTA will be decided very soon. And
Northern Cape.
Honorable members, please. No. Look, we know Parliament has its own internal processes, which may not always work out in our favor, but nonetheless, they are there. Please don't, DG, please, you are protected. I almost get the sense that there's an invisible gun held against your head and that of the member, which was House Chair in Parliament.
Yes.
The Honorable Kosana, the pointing fingers at you, Honorable. For 3 years.
He's here, Rio.
Okay, order, honorable members. Honorable members, order, please. Please, DG, continue.
H46. Let me share with you export classes per region. What Southern Africa exports? What Southern Africa exports? North Africa, both west and east. These are the SADC, these are AU regions. We have these five regions. But just to share with you, you can see there is a commonality on what we export as a region, which indicates that we have not really worked a lot in terms of beneficiation as a continent. And then the next slide shows how much South Africa exports with Africa, page 47. This is how much trade is from 2009 to 2011, imports and exports. There is a cry of imbalance of trade between us and the rest of Africa. In some areas, it can be very, very sensitive. Between us and Kenya, there's very sensitive proportions. But this is how much we have been exporting to the rest of the continent. The next slide, because of brevity of time, I wanted to go to page 50. export per continent last year. This is how much it goes to every continent, every little continent. You can see that by and large, we did a lot of exports to Asia. By far bigger than we did to Americas, and a couple of billions more to Europe, something like 60 billion more. And again, import is the same trend. We begin to import more and more from there. Now, the next slide I want to draw our members' attention to. I'm moving slowly. I'm going to jump the issue of branch. Colleagues are here, they will answer the question in terms of where we are in terms of branch. I just want to go to support services. Page 54. The second bullet, provincial and local government. Now, remember, I think we need help here in terms of, we agreed some time back that provincial government cannot sign agreement because they have no recourse in terms of international law. But it's still going on, this issue. And it creates problems in terms of implementation. Province go and sign agreement. They don't service those agreements. Then national ministers go to those countries that are given a bouquet of agreements signed, not serviced. It creates a bad feeling in code of our relations. So I just thought that we should put that point for the honorable members to look at. And then in terms of statistics, we have a very growing diplomatic corps in South Africa, huge. I think now we have 134 embassies. It is growing. And you see a number of UN agencies also coming to South Africa. These are valuable people. But what they've not done is to educate the public to protect and respect CD number plate. Now, in many countries, when you see a CD, these people are looking at, they are looking at as a very, very precious gift. Very precious gift. Why? Because they are built bridges, they build bridges, goodwill, they bring investment. They are our ambassadors, they speak for us in their country. But in South Africa, honourable members, maybe we need a roadshow to get South Africans about why, when they say now with CD, they must take a particular. You know, they hoot at them, wow, don't pack there, you know. You know what is happening in the roads about the CD. What do you think you are? Move out of this thing. So, it's not a very, very good sign at all. Not sign at all. If you go to other countries, even in Europe, Asia, Middle East, even at shopping, when you purchase that car, they're a diplomat, you see they move to a shorter queue. But in South Africa, no, that's a fact. Hey, what kind of model is this? Yeah, what kind of model? You know, so I think we need a public education about the issue of a diplomat. Then you go to page 47, 57. These are our projections going forward. We have been working very hard in the last 9 months addressing the concerns of Ute General. You know, the general came here, honourable members, and get the reports about accountability. So we have been working very, very, very hard to make sure that in this financial year, we really emerge better. Also the question of the where is the ICT? Page 61. We have we are taking through 7-8 ICT policies through the department to make sure that by end of March all the ICT policies are in place and address again the concerns raised by the Auditor General. If you go to, I'm going to go backward again a bit to page 58. That was our vote, 2012-2013. We are going to ask for a vote. That is the budget, how it looks like. Again, they cut our budget by 10% this year, for next year, 2012-2013. So we are going to be dealing with less resources, more work. So we hope that honorable members can really help us to deal with this issue. It can be very untenable. We are doing our level best to reduce wastage, to manage this thing, but it is very, very difficult. So that is how our budget looks like, 2012-2013. And then on the next page, that is how we'll allocate per program the budget. One of the issues that was raised by the General on page 60 was the supply chain management. That's why we brought Mayor Gazida with us here. The improvements are necessary. We need to work on the improvement on supply chain to weed out corruption, and to make sure that tenders are advertised, adjudication is transparent, inclusive, and to make sure that when decisions are taken, they can stand hands. They can be subject to any changes. So we are working very, very much on the issues that you see there on the board. And the last slide, the last one, is on page 64. Honourable members, we have worked very, very hard to reduce the vacancies in the department. The slide you see on page 64, especially on the bottom right hand, say vacancy 249. This was by the end of December last year. Since then, there's been some development to try to deal with the vacancy rate. I just want to draw your attention to that, including vacancies at the in the missions. A lot of work has been done in the last 6 weeks into the new year. And they were also going to go into next week or so. We have advertised posts. We hope that by the end of this financial year, we'll reduce the vacancy rate. And the next one is the question of equity in the department. We are obliged to report how we are dealing in terms of the issues. And if you look at the bottom there, we talk about the female SMS senior managers, 36%. We are required to go to 50%. Due to disability, 1.5%. We have to go to 2%. So we have to work very hard to move to 2% on that. But that is how the picture stands in terms of department, how it has been transformed from 1994 to present. As I said, honourable members, we have to work very, very hard on the issue of gender. But other areas of work seem to be doing well. I also want to do very, what we have very hard is in terms of heads of missions. We are now down to 29% in terms of female heads of missions. We're at 48%, so it means in the next cycle of posting in December, next year, we really have to move towards that percentage in terms of posting. But those are members of parliament going for posting. I think there's a lot of work to do here at home.
Can I go?
So, Chair, those are the type of, I wanted just to share with you those slides. And as I say, the rest of the slides, colleagues are here, they will help them to deal with that. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks for giving me the chance.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, DG, for this comprehensive. No, it's fine. I'm doing it for the purpose. Thanks for the comprehensive presentation. Now, honourable members, I've noted for the past 20 minutes or so, you've been quite restless. So let me call a break for 5 minutes. There's nothing to do with that. You've been restless. You've been up and down in this.
Look, we've done our job.
So let's break for 10 minutes at the most. And
we'll support
and
you.
Thank you.
We'll support
I admire a lot of the man. Thank you. I don't know.
Honorable September and Honorable Nivod Trupan in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. My voice has gone a bit, recovering from a cold. But I just want to make one comment on one of the last points made by the DG in terms of provinces signing agreements and stuff like that. I agree with the point that the DG has made. But it's not just provinces, it's also local governments. You find mayors and MMCs going out signing twinning agreements with cities and so on. And then, as Derko, you are confronted, or the minister is confronted by these when they visit and so on. So I think that is something that really needs to be looked at in terms of that, and there needs to be a protocol around it in terms of signing of agreements and so on. Then I've got a question or two. On slide four, on the Partnership Fund for Development, where it actually sets out SATPA, Project and Program Management, Monitoring and Evaluation. I think we need to maybe at some point just get an in-depth briefing in terms of what that SATPA agreement will be about. Because what are we monitoring and evaluating? What are programs and things that we're putting in place in projects? But it's not for now, it's just a point to put there, we can ponder on. On the next one, I'll just put all my, if it's fine with you, Chairperson, just put all my questions in and I'll finish. On page six, slide number five, I think, the replacement of partnership funds with the SATPA, with the African Grey Sound. And I hear the DG when he says that the amendments, which is too numerous to go through. So they're thinking of replacing the actual act. Well, acts are amended all the time. Okay, and I'm not sure how numerous the amendments are, that we can't just amend the actual act instead of replacing it. I'm not sure. Maybe there's an explanation for that. The Foreign Service Bill, I hear the DG saying that we were actually in sync with the PSA. Now, all our foreign diplomats, I would assume, falls under the PSA, because they're civil servants of South Africa. Now, I don't know if that is maybe meant for the staff recruited from the host country, because there's also a quota of the host country. If we in Brazil, we need to have certain staff from Brazil. So is that to cover them, or is it to cover us as well? Because I would have assumed that our staff members and our ambassador and his or her staff would be covered under the PSA, because they are civil servants. Let me just get to the other page quickly. In terms of South African exports and imports by country, it has been, and the DG can correct me if I'm wrong, 8 years since the IPSA agreement. Now, as you can see, I'm wearing my spectacles, I'm not seeing properly, but I don't see Brazil in terms of page 24. It's the top slide. I'm not sure if you're referring to the page or the slide. So it's slide 23, the top one, SA exports and imports by country. There is nothing from Brazil that we're exporting, but there's imports from Brazil, albeit minimal. The top section on the import side. Now, I'm not sure how do we handle that, because part of the partnership is about investment. It's about investment and imports, exports, and so on. Not just about being friendly with countries. On the next slide, slide 25,
where we have socioeconomic development trends. You know, I think we need to do a lot more work on the continent, because there, intra-African trade is only 12%. I'm not sure if we're doing something about that, because it's a bit worrying. Because Africa is very rich in terms of minerals, in terms of oil, in terms of natural resources and all of that. So I think we need to encourage a bit more intra-continental trade. And how are we doing that? How are we pursuing that? Then on slide number 31, in terms of enhancing the African agenda and sustainable development, the political and economic integration, I mean, it's like really how far are we? Because we also can't continue talk and not getting anywhere. I know it's a bit of a difficulty because we're all sovereign countries and all of that, but I think there needs to come a point where we need to say we are here or we are not here. Okay, now there was another thing, but I can't remember. I just made an access to that one. I think that's now it's just...
Okay, thank you, Honorable.
Thank you.
Honorable Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Kevin. Mr. Kevin, forgive me, this is my first meeting in KDI. I come from a corner of ignorance, so I might ask very silly questions or obvious questions, maybe obvious answers. But just in respect of the African Relations Fund Act, quite rightly it's been pointed out that is an act which governs the fund at this point in time. Is it the intention to rescind that act? And what will then be the basis upon which the new fund would be governed? I mean, it seems strange to me that it seems to be appropriate to govern the Renaissance Fund with an act and the new entity not with an act. Now, what is the rationale behind that? And there should be an act governing that. Because you've indicated that you intend possibly launching it in April, which is a couple of months ago, and clearly I don't see the potential for an act to be rushed through Parliament in that context. So what is the founding basis? Second of all, just in terms of the Foreign Services Bill, I don't quite understand, that's why I should wait for the bill to come out, but the relationship between what you've indicated are the requirements of the legal, or the rationale for the legal instrument, and the legal instrument itself. And perhaps if you could just encapsulate how the two relate to each other, I would be able to understand. I mean, you went into a situational analysis which I thought incredibly interesting. But how does that relate to the Foreign Services Bill? Just if you could, and that's perhaps showing my ignorance in that context. Just in terms of that situational analysis, a couple of comments which I found interesting. Obviously, the thrust of what I'm hearing is a need to diversify trade out of Europe, where there is recession, to countries which are high-growth GDP countries. And there are all sorts of good reasons for that. But I just wanted to ask you, to what extent, I mean, when one looks at the balance of trade in respect of China, for instance, you see there's a deficit there. A lot of that generated by the value of the renminbi. Now, is there any pressure at any time being placed on China to revalue that? Because it seems that we will never be able to get that balance right. I mean, I think it's the problem that the whole of the rest of the world has with China, that they have a devalued currency relative to all other international currencies. So you'll never get that right in terms of the trade balance. The third point I just want to make is just that one obviously would like to focus on growth into Africa, but you've actually highlighted the problem as far as growth into Africa is concerned, and that's the whole question of logistics. you cannot expect corporate South Africa to trade into Africa when there's a lack of infrastructural development. And that is a huge, obviously, inhibiting factor in that context. And then just as far as integration of SADC is concerned, I mean, this is an interesting one, and I think we should tread very warily. Because I think economic integration in terms of trade is great. I mean, I think the European Union as it was is a good example of that, free trade area. But when it comes to what I heard you call monetary union, then I think the lessons of Europe have got to be learned. But there can't be monetary union without fiscal union. And that has all sorts of ramifications and implications, and particularly for South Africa in that context. So, and all sorts of convergence criteria that have been brought into account, and whether there's the central banks of the area. I mean, all the problems of Europe are there for us to see, and to what extent are we learning the lessons of Europe in that context. And then finally, I didn't see it, and perhaps I missed it, but the interesting interaction as far as EPAs are concerned. Where are we as far as that is concerned? Have we made progress? Because that obviously has implications as far as North-South trade is concerned. And in fact, South-South trade as well. Thanks.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Davidson, Honorable Boyd.
Thank you. Good morning, sir. You know I like you. Not because of the questions posed about inter-sexual relations, but you're just a nice sir. No, I'm saying it's one question I'm going to pose.
You didn't say this on the record, did
you? Good morning, sir. No, it's here. It's a question that they say we must be very careful about it, you know. I thought, you know, on this foreign service deal and the current reality, you know, I don't understand. Are you saying that since 1994 you didn't have a clear mandate? But we all talk of a constitutional state. Now, how has foreign affairs been operating? Because you say there's no, it's not legislated, no constitutional articulation. So what is it that you are talking about? Are you demanding some constitutional amendment, or what are you saying to us? Because if you want us to legislate for it, you then have to clarify us. So that's our role. You would have to speak to us and give us more information that what is it that you are expecting out of us. And for me, are you creating a deal that works like an omnibus that covers everything? Or what type of a deal are you putting together that could be able to assist in the world that you are talking about? But it will be quite a big challenge for all of us when we deal with this type of deal. It is going so much massive, you see. Maybe you should talk more to us about that foreign service deal and the mandate that they are really looking for. Because it seems as if they are looking for a constitutional mandate, they are also looking for a fiscal mandate. Because if you say to us, there needs to be taken into account different legal systems of various countries when we do the rationale for a legal instrument. I'm just saying that make rationale now so that we all could be able to understand that what is it that you are looking for. Are you operating with no mandate? Or are you saying that this is the only legislation that will come in since 1994 to assist the department itself? And as you are saying, that PSA and all those things, we need to be able to cover them. The one thing that I'm not sure in your situational analysis, what are we dealing with here? You see? Are you preparing us for a mind shift? Or are you just giving us a nice scenario so that you should not ask your questions? Because I would thought that you wouldn't just give a one line about the AU situation. And that's just Nkosazana. Minister Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. You are not going to give us a one line. Whilst you have not even presented that to us when we went that direction, what implication does it have for us? Because at this particular moment, it's a situation of 50-50 or 50. I mean, King hasn't been in the forefront and one better. What does that thing mean to us? So you have not explained to us that. What ramification does it have in terms of our relationship with the North? Does it leave us better? Does it leave us in a situation where the lesson that should be taken out of it is that we are under pressure? So that's why maybe we have not given so much about Africa and our relationship with the North. So for me, it's very much important, because also what I miss in that analysis is how much foreign influence are we talking about? Because it's quite clear that within that situation, the French have got a bigger role, and they have committed, or different other countries have created a problem for us in how we relate to the North Africa. Now, when I listen to your analysis, I don't hear that. Now, why I'm posing this question is because it does have to come up that what relationships are we entering into, even if it's inter-trade. Are we having very, very good relationship with the different African countries? Or are we working around here misleading each other? Because here we have lost a post. I agree with you, SADC says let's go back. But what about the North? And what are the implications for anything that we want to do with Africa? And how far does that go? You see, you must understand, for me what is important is how do we break from colonialism and the influence of other countries over what we are proposing here. So your situational analysis, I don't feel that you have taken us into confidence about that. It's a nice statistical analysis that comes from IMF. I want you to give us what happens in foreign affairs. Does the situation of the AU put us in a more stronger position or not? So that when we spend resources in Africa, we know what we're dealing with. Those resources have to accompany our decisions. What is it that we are getting confronted with? So for me, that it's a more bigger question. It's not just a small question of a one line that says SADC says we must go back. I can see the other analysis of Europe, but I want to deal with Africa that what are we? Because even in terms of the economy, it would mean that with whom are we trading and how do we do that trade? It's getting nicer in the Southern African countries, but what do we do in the North? It does go a little bit further in, you know, I hear what you're saying about uprising and us through the Algerian, what being able to recognize uprising. You know, I want to be a little bit fundamental. So social media creates that environment. And now today, I mean, in media, there's no leadership. There's just tension and there's infighting. Is that the situation you want to encourage? Now, I'm just trying to find out, these are all situational analysis that you have presented. So I want to find more. Is it what you are saying that we should prepare for? Because for me, if you don't do a correct analysis of Africa, you're not going to put us on the correct footing. It might be betrayed, but what are you saying to us? Because if uprisings are going to be allowed to determine relations, so let's allow situations where even all the mobilizations that people can do and overthrow a government should be allowed. Is that what you're asking us as a government to do and endorse? If we don't see real disobedience take place, what do we do with it? And then at the end of the day, there's no government, but we still want to trade with somebody there. Or we put up a machine and we don't know whom we are talking to. I'm just trying to get more clarity about that situation, that what is it that we are coming. You see, for me, the other thing, which is a little bit of a concern, is it's where South Africa is doing. Just arrogant. Arrogant. Arrogant is arrogant. That South Africa doesn't provide leadership in dealing with this situation. That's a question that gets imposed. So in this situation analysis, is that what do you want us to do in Africa? Do you want us to help the department to be able to provide leadership, put in our resources, or do you want us just to get our praise and love the situation as it is, with not major changes taking place? Because you see, my last concern, you see, is when you deal with, like what we are saying, that BRICS Summit, African Agenda and Sustainable Development, position South Africa as a gateway springboard. You know that thing? We have practiced it before. I know when we came in 1994 into power, we've been talking about ourselves as a gateway. And that does not improve our relationship with different African countries. But also, as we talk of now, FDI is more taking place into Angola more than South Africa. What does that mean to us? What type of an attitude are we taking on this particular matter? Are we really a gateway into Africa? Or we want to see ourselves like that? I'm saying that this word has been used since 1994. The Americans introduced it and we really entertained it, and we have not made much progress. Yes, I'm coming. I thought you also allowed September to see with no stop. Oh, yes.
What are you talking about?
About Kimate. Jacobus.
Honorable point.
Yes, sir.
At this point, I haven't said anything.
Okay,
you
not
said, you said it was your last point.
No, I'm sorry, I was
in
not
in anticipation of your wrapping up.
No.
On my mind.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I've not yet. I'll okay. Tell you my last point.
But can you wrap up?
I'll wrap up, yes. No, my last point, you know what I see at the back is international transfer. As a member of parliament, I'll be quite interested. That in all what you are saying, how do you come to that conclusion of the 873? And how does it? You see, I'm interested in the breakdown of it. Is it. Where do you locate it? Is it in assets? Is it in your traveling? Is it in whose traveling? I mean, give me the fact. Yeah, it's the last page at the back. At the back page, it says international transfer. And you mean that this thing can rise over some time in the way you've done an analysis about it? The rising, it's right at the back on the chest. Yeah, that one, that's the figure I'm really interested in, the breakdown of that figure. So how did you arrive at that particular figure?
Thank you, Honorable Boyd. Honorable members, given the fact that we have about 50 minutes left, just over 50 minutes left to do both the next briefing on the quarterly report and questions and clarity and so on, I would seriously ask that you restrict your talking to at least 2 minutes at the most. Okay.
I don't know whether the chair would agree that because this was really enough information that we had, and some of us have longer questions. So would it be agreeable to Your Excellency that some of us simply write them down and give them to them at some point?
Okay.
Because it's a discussion, it's a discourse.
Yes.
It's not the point where we approve or disapprove. It's where we want clarifications and where we also put some input and make some contributions.
Okay.
Can I come in, sir?
All right.
Yes. You see, provided the person, those remain individual questions outside the portfolio committee. But if they are related to parliamentary work, I would rather all of us then be subjected to all of us so that we can all apply in whatever every member is contributing.
Okay.
But if ever they are going to go in, they will be seen as smartly, more than new questions.
Okay, let's do this. We will have a second engagement when we are supposed to adopt the strategic plan. So, those questions that cannot be posed today, please pose them to the department. And we then use that opportunity before we adopt the strategic plan to have responses from the department in the committee on those issues and then finalize the adoption of the strategic plan. So that will provide everybody then the opportunity to hear what the questions were and what the responses are in the committee. No, I don't want us to argue this thing, Honourable, because then it's not smuggled under the table. It's not information that is privy only to some. It's open and everybody knows what the responses are.
Commissioner.
No, Honourable, boy, I don't want us to argue the thing. I want to make that ruling.
No, Commissioner, I agree with your ruling, but the problem is it commits up. You see. It doesn't commit you alone. I mean, you want to hear what members are sharing with other people. I wanted to ask you to say, can that be situated so that we know what we're talking about? You can't just be getting a response to the convention. If any democratic system, give us the opportunity to know what people are engaging about.
That's fine.
You have to situate it so that you know what your members are asking.
Okay. That's fine. I'm sure if you could provide the committee secretary with copies of your questions, then these could be circulated amongst all the members.
No. To me, it's quite transparent, because I've got about 12 issues to raise.
Okay.
Now, we only said 15 minutes. So I agree with you that, no, we need to do that in 15 minutes. So I was trying really to say, let's use that time sensitive.
All right.
And I'm not going to raise issues that they all come out of here.
No.
And some of them are simply suggestions. They're not questions.
Yeah. Okay, Honourable Members, let me make the following ruling, okay? Those questions that cannot be entertained in today's meetings will be transmitted to the committee secretary, all right? The committee secretary will then disseminate that information to everybody. But may I also request that we leave, we postpone the discussion of the quarterly report for today, and we can find an appropriate space for it in our program going forward. So that will give us a little bit more time to deal with the strategic plan of the department. Okay, that's fine. It looks like that's fine with everybody.
Yeah.
So we dispense with the second point on the agenda, and we will engage to the extent that we can, given still the time constraints.
Yeah.
And in the event that there are still outstanding questions, these will be transmitted to the committee secretary. Okay. Now, thank you very much. Baba, you'll then get the opportunity to raise some of the issues that you, or all of the issues that you wanted to raise. Next on my list is Honourable September. Please, Honourable Members, notwithstanding, we still need you to limit your time.
Yes. I agree with you.
Chair, you can provide protection to the members also. I want to thank you very much. I want to ask the following. Very quickly on the proposed bill, the only comment I want to make there is that we must not have a situation where there will be unintended consequences as arose out of the WTO with regards to the services issues that were debated, that we're sensitive that whatever has been put in there doesn't have that unintended consequence. The second one is, Chair, with regards to the strat plan, I want to find out, we are mid-term now, and so we're obviously interested to find out, you know, what is the state of the international nation with regards to the 5-year objective that we have set to the country in international relations? Can you with confidence say to us that this strategic plan does address that aspect also? and does tell us also the 2.5 years that are ahead of us, whether we will indeed meet all those objectives that we have set aside ourselves. Already you said that we've met, we haven't met deadlines on a number of other decisions that we have taken on, on all the unions, the COMESA and all of that. But more so, Chair, does the strategic plan assist us in saying that with confidence we are integrating into the region? Does this strategic plan say that indeed our national interests around growing the economy are being met in the strategic plan? Does it also speak to the fact that we are reducing poverty, but more so we are improving the lives of all the people in the country? So with whatever we are doing, whether it's on trade matters and any other, that at least these matters are uppermost, but are being met at least. I'm saying this here because, of course, we can see in the international arena, there's a regression, more than. There are more poor people, more and more. And I'm not blaming Zirko for all of that, but clearly, how does the strategic plan speak to that? And the last one that I want to ask, Chair, is now that you are not meeting the targets, because we've said that we need to have, political... all these unions that we were going to establish, what is the plan then if the target is not met? To where have you shifted the target, or what are the other interventions? Having said that, I'm really interested to hear from the department their view on the National Planning Commission's assertions that they have put in their document, and that is that they talk about South Africa is involved in all sorts of things. We are paying to be members of very many. Are they value for money? All of these things. But they refer to this something called the spaghetti bowl that we are in the international planning. They refer to the spaghetti bowl that we are in all these overlapping regional affiliations and commitments and so on. And they then caution about, is this useful for the country to continue with this spaghetti bowl, a bowl, and then ask that we require a critical and a pragmatic evaluation of these existing spaghetti bowls. I'd really love that and the other ones of the National Planning Commission. I'm interested in the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable September, Honourable Newell.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. At the same time, thank you to the department for their presentation. On page 9, on slide 9, just a question for clarity.
Wait, excuse me. Honourable Kazana? Oh, okay. That's fine.
The PSA, our staff and our government staff, I just need clarity. The staff from the country where our embassies are, what labor laws govern them? I just need clarity. Is it their country's labor laws or our country's labor laws that do govern them? And then the fund. Where does it fit in to the organizational structure? Yes, I know, and I still have a response on the fund, but then the allocations to the different projects, who then oversee then those funds that have been given to projects? I don't see that in the organogram. And then on page 39, I'm happy to see that on the participation on international human rights, I'm happy to see that the strengthened and protection mechanism and violence based on sexual orientation. But my concern on the AU agenda, they do discuss human trafficking, and especially human trafficking of women, especially of women and children. I don't see if that is a priority here. And then on page 55, you said that the department must promote South African foreign policies nationally. Just curious, what is the department then doing nationally to promote it, and how will you do it? Because when I came into this committee, we just finished the public diplomacy in the university, but I do not hear what the department is doing to encourage the national diplomacy nationally. And then 73, just in the interest of time, I don't mind written answers to this, but the general skills development, I'm happy to see that the youth programs are implemented, and then also, but what programs and what do you train our youth on in foreign affairs matters? I just need some answers on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to satisfy also my honorable colleague Boy there, that the question has come from this document here. The first one is, I think Honorable Davis did say something about it, the funds. That I believe they are, the way political and economic conditions justifying the African Renaissance Fund. Now my question is, are those conditions now still applying to the new fund, the partnership fund? Did you raise an issue about who now should head the fund? I agree with you that there must be a head of the fund. Somebody must head the fund. But I also think that there must be a direct relationship between the head of the fund and the management of the project. I mean, who prioritizes the project and who costs it? I also agree with you there on the system of rand for rand basis. I think it's a good scheme personally, but again it calls for the question: who determines the project themselves and who costs them, so that we could pay rand for rand basis. Thank you, indulgence. I'm running amok here. The other one is page 18, I think. There's situational analysis there with those various countries and the interests. My question there would be then the significance of that situation there regarding our own foreign policy, particularly when it comes to stability. Because when you have so many countries determining or challenging your foreign policy, where do you become stable at some point? What determines your stability? See why I wanted to write this thing down. Well, the other one is on the socio-economic development, the intra-African trade. I remember you when you gave us the presentation last time, it was about 10%. I see now it's 12%. What really happened there? Where did you get that 2%? Because it shows some improvement there, which we may have to follow. Now, there's an issue which was raised by Honourable Boy regarding the Ambassador Nazuma candidacy. I think he's right there. You are saying something to us as a portfolio committee, whether we need to endorse the candidacy or not endorse the candidacy. If we endorse the candidacy, on what basis? What would we benefit in the position itself as a state? But I think you are saying something else there. The other one is on BRICS and South Africa. I think to me this ties up with the bill that you also want to kick in. Because recently I did ask a question from the Deputy President regarding the agreement, the international agreement that we signed with different countries, particularly BRICS, when it comes to trade. Now, my point was that it looks as if these countries, as you said it yourself, that we allow most of their people to come in into our country with those agreements. But in those agreements, are we also allowed to take about 40, 50, 500 of our unemployed South Africans into China or to Brazil? Or, because what I see is the flow of Chinese, a flux of, but I don't see South Africans going into China in their hundreds who are unemployed. What kind of agreement is that one? There should there be a reciprocity on this. You see, now I have to rush. I'm looking for the last one. Okay. The last one was you seem to have said that you have a problem with the protocol. I think members here can also say that there are so many difficulties when it comes to the protocol in some of these activities. But I think that we need to talk to the security services. Because they are the ones who are manning these activities. I mean, you come into Parliament or you go at State of the Nation address, it's security services. Those are the people who look at people and say whether you must come in or not, whether your car is multi-problemed or not. I don't think we have spoken to those people about what is happening here. And the protocol service officials in all the departments also, they need to be spoken to about the protocol, because there is a tendency of selecting people just because you've been given a task as an official, and you begin to select people, and at times even tickets disappear.
Even Parliament.
Yeah, tickets disappear in most of it. Mr. Chairman, let me say I'm okay then.
Thank you. The last is Honorable Ilof, and then we must give the DG an opportunity to respond to.
Thank you, Chair. I've just got one question. What I'd like to know, maybe this will be more for trade and industry, but the vast amount of things that get exported from South Africa and into South Africa, is there any link or any program where the traders, the manufacturers of this country know what the other people are importing, that they can get introduced for trade opportunities, even for opportunities of people in South Africa to know what we're importing, that we can go into that market and see if we can do something about it. That will solve a lot of problems, job creation, etc. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Ilof. I will have to give, I mean, there's so many questions. I'll give the DG the opportunity to clarify.
Chair, I have to thank the honorable members on behalf of the delegation. I think you have asked over 32 questions. And very, very important questions. So we have 15 minutes left, which means I have to take a quarter minute to answer every question. So honorable members, you may want to agree that perhaps we isolate what we think are common questions you have asked. Because it is not possible to answer all of them. But maybe let's agree that we prioritize issues of Africa, which didn't cover greatly this statement. The issue of the candidate of the African Union, Dr. Dlamini Zuma, and the issues of the bill, the Foreign Service Act, and substance. I don't think it's physically possible to do that in a few minutes. I just make a proposal. And then the rest can then answer in question form. Or we can then come back to our members if you need us. Then we can go through the same question. When we come to the third quarter report, we can then answer the rest of the questions at that time. I'm just proposing, Chair, so that I can then begin.
DG, can I, yes, indeed there is a lot of interest on the AU Commission election, but we need a briefing on the AU Commission election, as a briefing on its own, next week indeed. So all I'm saying, you may touch on it, it's fine, because questions have been raised, but that will require a briefing. We can't deal with it in 10, 15 minutes. It won't do justice to the issue, and I think it will leave more questions than answers. Than really responding to. May I request you to try to limit your responses mostly to the issues contained in the strategic plan. I'm sure the other political issues we will deal with as we continue, you know, going forward. But to the extent, because this must assist us eventually to deal with the strategic plan. As the committee. So if you could do that, please.
Okay, let me...
I'm trying to provide direction in terms of the approach of the DG with regard to responding to the questions. So long as it doesn't attempt to alter what I said. Okay, let me give Honorable Boyfa before you.
No, it doesn't alter. It doesn't alter, Commissioner. It is just what I wanted to say. There is a document also that has been provided to us in terms of the Dlamini Zuma issue. But I wanted to also to do a correction. There's no Minister Alice Zuma. So in that thing that is provided is there. And what would be the standing in what you are saying of this particular document to be sent over to next week?
Now, also, Chairperson, I'm sorry, that's also what you are saying. The DG will respond to, as you said, the question pertaining to the strategic plan, but also those that can be answered in writing. Let that be submitted, because it will also inform our budget debates and all of that will go forward later. So if that question can't be responded to now or whatever, let that be forwarded to us as well.
Thanks. There is a question that has been asked in different ways regarding the SADC, which is ERF. Now, honorable members, in December 2007, the ruling party adopted a resolution entitled South African Development Partnership Agency. They said to us, move and establish something that will address the question of cooperation, coordination, and mutual understanding. We cannot continue electioning into Africa. We cannot continue reacting to African issues. So establish this thing. Let us learn from advanced democracy Scandinavian Islands, how do you manage to create a partnership in development with the rest of Africa? Secondly, move away from this donor recipient tendency, like master and servant relationship, but move into cooperation, where your assistance should be an engagement with a particular country, and your assistance should dovetail into priorities of this country. As I again tell people, do this, don't do this, do that. So seek cooperation. The third area was, we need to gradually move to a situation where we can assist Africa to develop industries. At that time when the scan was made, there were very few and very weak industries in Africa. It was mostly state enterprises and multinational corporations. But within the continent, you could count in any country viable, established companies. So then they say, but why don't we create a facility that will really gradually over a period of time address this question? The fourth one was addressing post-conflict situations. As South Africa, we spend resources in terms of conflict prevention, negotiation, and peacekeeping. But what do we do, all of us? When the peace is there, we all move out. So nobody remains and continues in peace to make sure that things don't slide back into crisis and are even reversible. So, like we saw in Europe, among the in Holland, Germany, Denmark, Finland, they begin now to move towards economic cooperation. So that as conflict ends, let's create conditions where people can be employable, skilled, so that people are gainfully employed. So, this is not the spirit that I think dominated the ruling party in Polokwane. Then they went to their manifesto structure. So, we, civil servants, what we normally do, after you have your elections, we then take public policies and move it into program. So, what this has to do was to look into this mandate and see how best to implement it. And to make sure that the shortcomings identified in ARF are changed. When I was going to ask a very important question, have the political situation, that is the situation of ARF, changed or not? Now, I don't know if you recall, there was a heated debate in 1999-2000 about the African Renaissance, the Bridges of Africa, when the world was saying it's a dark continent, we said no, Virgin continent. Why, at that time, 1999-98, a lot of conflict in the continent. Coups, internal strife, movement of refugees, there was huge migration. People moving from Rwanda into Congo, from Burundi into Tanzania, there was huge movement of people, internally, inter-border and outside. There were conflict. And then at that time, we said, no, it's high time we're still tied in the continent. In that time, we give confidence to the continent. In that time, we address this Afro-pessimism about the continent. What do we do? So we develop a good policy. That's how NIPAD was born, if all I remember the call. But then we have NIPAD. You then have to say, is there an accompanying envelope? Is there an accompanying resource for NIPAD? That's how ARF was born, to respond to these challenges. So now it has been 11, 20, 12 years after that. So we said, that's why we share with our members those slides about what happened in the continent. And we said, maybe now is high time we move towards development cooperation, where we look into crisis and post-crisis situations with the possibility to strengthen institutions of governance in the post-conflict areas in Africa to make sure that it is reliable. Also, our own selfish end. These are our markets, these are our neighborhood. We don't want migration, we want to stabilize the continent. So the ARF philosophy is not lost, it will be sustained with a bit of shift towards development cooperation. More and more development, not only stabilizing conflict, but developing institutions, small businesses, training, technology transfer, those kind of things, because we believe it is that area that we can see lasting peace in Africa. There was then a subsequent question asked by a colleague, by your colleague, program, partnership. We saw during our partnership in the DRC when in 2006 we had to manage a very, very delicate process there. All of you must recall that in 2003 we spent over 30 million rand, South African, even 320 delegation of DRC in Sanfield for 3 months, 2 weeks. 3 months, 2 weeks, unprecedented in conflict resolution in the continent. Where we put our resources to make sure that the people of DRC a chance in 35 years to move towards democracy. At the end of that conflict in Sanfield, we said, we cannot leave them. Let us then help them to create institutions for elections. That's why we helped them to call their own people, set up SENI, Electoral Election Commission, infrastructure, etc., etc., to make sure that the gains of South City are sustained at least in the emerging elements of democracy and governance in the DRC. But as we do that, with a lot of trilateral cooperation, example, in terms of civil sector reform, Ambassador Ngobane was ambassador in the DRC at that time, on my right hand side. We had to work with the Belgians and others for security reform, trilateral. We had to work with Sweden and others in terms of country of people. We had to work with the Japanese in terms of policy. So there was a lot of trilateral cooperation, which we found very, very useful. That people have high respect for South Africa. You can trust South Africa with their funds and roll out of services. So, because of DRC, we then went with it to Burundi, where we began to help Burundi peace talks again. For instance, Holland for the financial facility. We've sent our troops. EU put money. So there was a lot of cooperation going forward. So we thought this element proving in the operation should not be lost as we construct new financial perspectives for South Africa vis-à-vis the continent of Africa. So these elements, honorable members, have had to shape our philosophy of SADMA. The third most important area, as I say, was the proliferation of South African various national government departments, input assistance in the rest of the continent, lack of coordination. Now, ARF doesn't have that provision. ARF is a government instrument for reactive. Within ARF, they ask for help. You don't propose help. You have to wait for countries to say we need help. Right now, Guinea-Bissau is asking us for help for the election. Then they ask, now, SADC says be proactive for align this thing with early warning system. Don't wait until you are asked because that is the provision we have. So we have to be very proactive. We can see the situation is emerging in that particular country. So we can begin dialogue, not wait. So SADC will be more proactive. The fourth area of SADC will be to have all these various instruments, financial assistance of various government departments in what you call. So we move away from the RDP fund, we move away from ERF into one comprehensive fund, adapted by that philosophy of African medicine and the need to shift development cooperation. Hence, honorable members, we are even saying recently that we need to make sure that as we move to go to Serbia to study how the EU have helped emerging Eastern European countries that join them to the fund, we must also take a member of parliament. When you go to Norway to see, we must also be a member. So all, we are in the same wavelength, so to say, on the lessons of the two funds. I think one of the members can spend more time on that. But also, I think we need to brief you about the business case for SADC, which was developed in the Treasury and Public Service Commission. So I think we need to come there because there is a very elaborate business case, voluminous on the business case, why SADC. Now, in terms of management of SADC, the ARF is managed within Bureau on Africa Multilateral. Ambassador Ngombani was the DDG of Asia Middle East before Ambassador Sukla arrived this year from Brussels. Now he's a custodian of the ARF. And Jerry, the one who's speaking, is the chair of the ARF advisory report. So normally what happens, let's say Guinea-Conakry, President Konda will say, can you help us with the question of election? We don't have this thing of every time people dispute outcome. What system do you have? Let me go to Mayor Brigadier Gam and our IEC and say, can we teach them? What do you do to prepare elections, to educate people, to organize the voting polls, and to make sure that at the end, everybody accepts? So, then IEC, will can then apply to us and say, we need these resources to go for voter education in Guinea-Conakry. So that's how we work. In that case, then IEC will help us to account for the funds utilized. Then they say, okay, we want you in South Africa to be in the ballot box. So we look at the companies in South Africa and say to IEC, can you shortlist these companies and give us 2-3 credible companies? Example, DRC will do something like 600 tons of ballot paper, because in one ballot there were 18 presidential candidates. But in one ballot, in one province, you have to put in 120 faces in a ballot box, in a ballot paper.
Yes, right.
So how do you do that? People cannot do it. So we go to our company. There was one from Cape Town that said, look, in that constituency, it's 126 people. How do you put all these faces there? Surely A1 page cannot come in there. So you have to have 3 A1 pages. Now you have to visualize a ballot box, how will you put that people in one into that thing? But how will you educate a simple Congolese in the middle of nowhere how to choose? So these are the sort of things we remember that Virgo does in this country. So, but we then rely on our own companies. Then printing, we go to South African Defense Force and say, we need to fly 17 times the DRC to 13 spots, and we need to fly 25 times to small countries, and then we need to fly 125 times to smaller regions. And then UN can then be with us to take now to 6,000 ballot boxes, where sometimes you have to cycle for 2 days. And then as Angola, Tanzania, all in all, we have 67 aircraft flying crisscross in the DRC in the last election. Can we give them? No, we cannot give them DRC. Second elections, otherwise we will slide back into KO, and the whole belly of Africa will have crisis. So, but the ARF cannot take us forward after the COVID DRC. Now there's elections, what do? To make sure that in the next 5 years, they don't ask us to do the same thing again they've been asking for that time. So, those honorable members are the rationale in summary of why we are sat by and we asked you to do that. Foreign Service Bill, I'm informed by the experts behind me that there's a constitutional provision which says the president is the foreign policy chief, but he delegates the minister develop policy proposal and implement them. What we have in Berko, we have something like, in terms of diplomats, is Vienna Convention. Who is qualified? So I said to the diplomats, according to Vienna Convention, these are the following provisions for consular services, for Canadian diplomats. But unlike SARS, unlike defense, I don't have a bill which, okay, say, according to Foreign Service Bill, this is how I will conduct foreign policy. We don't have that. It's like a civil servant who's doing water affairs in Palabura, or a nurse who does very good services in Matapiela, or somebody who's constructing a hospital in Umtata. Our theater of operation is abroad, beyond the border. That's why they are called diplomats. We are called foreign services. Now, in that environment, the laws are not South African. Of course, the embassy is South African, the residents are South African, but the rest is foreign. And we have to begin to interact with this world governed by a proliferation of conventions, of protocols, of systems. So we need to find a way of fitting in that environment. One of the members have asked, is this bill, Israel's voice, will it govern only the LRPs, what's called local business staff, or not? Harold Kosana asked, will ARF law, when you recruit staff, do you use the local laws or the Arabian laws? We are in 136 countries. We have to recruit according to the local laws. Now you can imagine how much expertise must we have to understand the laws from Fiji across the Pacific, Europe to Latin America, and up in Argentina, and then come to Lesotho, Botswana, etc. Exploration of this law. However, the LRPs have a choice. LRPs can look where it's advantage. If the local law is advantageous to them, they choose the local law. But I have no choice. We have to employ them according to the local law. So you have that problem. And now the PA, that our public service doesn't give provision for me to interact in that foreign environment. I don't remember, I think I've gone over time. But maybe we need to come back to this question because also it's where is the bill as you speak. Because then we need our members to assist us. So maybe with time, we can act, even our members will come back here because this is our next initiative. We think that maybe by the end of this year, we need to have that bill in place. But I think there is still a need for more interaction with our members of Citizen analysis just to indicate the role of us as diplomats, our members, is to come to you and say, here is the world in which I'm operating. Here are the trends taking place. We have to come to you to inform you with a list of where we see the trend is moving. And therefore, when we locate and propose to you, that plan going forward, the next 5 years, we can say because of this trend that we believe we can have to situate your code in this area and be present in both. Well, you agree with us on another certain question. You can advise us. But we thought that we have to come with you with a well-researched, factual information of global trends. Because we are members of the international community, we are in that community, so that at least we can share with you what we see happening. And then you can then advise us whether our orientation is the correct one or not correct one. Maybe for now, Honorable Chair, I can say this with you. I'm doing the colleagues have come here. I've got 11 colleagues, all the way from Pretoria, but they didn't have a chance to say it. But I think I'm very happy with what has been said. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Thank you so much, TG. No, honorable members, indeed, there's, I'm sure, still a lot of questions and some of the issues that you may want to interrogate further. We will get that opportunity again when we engage on this threat plan before adoption. I think, DG, there are at least four issues that have, at least three, we've agreed to the candidacy issue. We've had at least two prior engagements on SATPA. Not the first engagement we have on SATPA. We've had two prior. Clearly, there still is a need for us to engage again on SATPA. The issue of the FSB, it also needs further engagement. Perhaps long before to give us a pretty good idea of at least what to expect, from this foreign ministry, and interrogate further some of the questions relating to it. And then, of course, the South African Council on International Relations. Another critical area, we have spoken about it. in a previous engagement, clearly there are processes already taking place around the council, of which the committee must be appraised of as we move forward. I think there's nominations. The nomination process is still, the last time we had a chat about it was when I think the department wasn't quite sure what role it would play and how it would, you know, engage with either the minister or the department, what exactly would be its position in the architecture. We certainly need another engagement on this council as well. Honourable members, for next week, we have again the issue of Palestine and the Israeli conflict. After much briefings, symposiums, and so on that we had on the matter, and a visit to Gaza, the committee has, or at least should, you know, deal with the recommendations. We have received and disseminated the various positions of parties, which of course will then constitute the basis for engagement and resolutions by the committee on this very important issue. Secondly, will then also be the briefing on the EU Commission around what transpired and what the issues are around the election of the chair of the EU Commission. Honourable members, in fact, perhaps just a word of, or perhaps just to request members, for some reason, Honourable Skosan, when this Palestinian-Israeli issue is on the table, for some reason we do not have a quorum in the committee. For some reason, this has happened a couple of times. please, honourable members, let's ensure that we have a quorum so that we are able to take a resolution.
I'm not so sure.
As a committee.
Why
No. You're not. It's not you. It's certainly not you, Bob. No, you're not. No, I was just, I was talking through you, actually. Oh, okay. No, I understand. No, you're not the culprit. You're not the culprit. The political parties know themselves. I don't want to be exposing people here, but the parties know them. They know themselves. So please let's ensure that we have that quorum to finalize this matter once and for all so that we move to other issues. Thank you so much, Honourable Members Gigi and your staff. Thank you so much for coming to the meeting. Members of the public, thank you so much as well.
Well, Mr. Rwanda. We've been together for many years, you know, it's not yet. Can you come to the van? I'm not now going. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't
know.
Okay. Do you want a copy of the recording?
Yes. Lubavalo? You need the recording, right? The recording, right?